Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
We may live over 5,000 miles from Lincoln Financial Field, but what we lack in proximity, we make up for in the film study. And each and every week, we'll be bringing you in-depth film breakdowns from across the pond and the Sooner State. Welcome to On the Shane Page. I am your host, Shane Half. You can follow me on Twitter at ShaneHalfNFL. And I'm joined today by BGN's own film guru, Johnny Page. Give him a follow on Twitter at JohnnyPage9. Johnny, how are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm not bad. We were speaking off air and I've just realized that I'm very ill. My voice has been gone and I was worried about this podcast. I've survived, but I've got my tea here and I've realized that I always forget it's a video podcast. So I've got this very colorful, strange, like strongman style mug that looks very weird. And I realize I've screwed up because my Eagles mug is downstairs and I've just realized. And now I'm very sad that I don't have the Eagles mug for the Eagles podcast. But that would take preparation, Shane. I watch a lot of film, but I don't prepare anything else. What you hear here is very little preparation time. It's basically everything I've seen in the film, and then I just waffle, and I didn't even prepare the Eagles mug. But yeah, you've got building work going on, as always. I've got a dodgy voice. But except for that, I think everything's good. I think it's been an interesting one, actually, because I think me and you have probably faced more criticism in the past three days than we have for a while on our anti-Devin White stance. But I actually don't think I was too critical on my film review. I'm sort of mixed on Devin White, so I think it's been an interesting one. I think, yeah, we're going to talk quite a lot about him because I've watched a lot of him. He was a player that I really wanted to watch, so I basically haven't watched anyone else. I spent all of my time on Devin White, so I feel like I've got a really good idea of what he's like. So I think this will be a good one. If you're here for an in-depth Devin White breakdown, then I reckon this is as good as it gets in the podcast universe, because it's probably not too many people too mental to watch as much Devin White as I have the past few days.
Yeah, I made a lot of Eagles Twitter upset with me by pointing out that I wasn't thrilled with Devin White. And then I made more of Eagles Twitter angry with me when I said I liked trading for Kenny Pickett. And then I made even more of Eagles Twitter mad at me when I said I would have rather traded for Justin Fields. So I lit Eagles Twitter on fire this week. Apparently, man, Justin Fields is a guy you don't ever want to mention on Twitter because people just go mental. But yeah, I love the mug. You're going to have listeners like sending you Eagles mugs now or something, if they can find your address. I don't know. Unfortunately, my daily coffee companion for the last 4 years met its end this morning. It got knocked off of the counter. So I had to, I eulogized it on Twitter earlier. So I'm going to have to switch up mugs as well.
I'll tell you what is actually a true fact as well, Shane, is my mug is from Philly. So I bought a mug and a glass from Lincoln Financial Field in 2016. The glass, RIP, has not made it. Too many trips to the dishwasher for a glass, for that Eagles glass to survive. But the mug has survived. Despite trips to work in the bag, it has lived on. I've been repping Philly at work a lot. But yes, it is from Lincoln Financial Field, from the official stadium. Yet, instead, I have this random mug. And not the Eagles one. But yeah, that was the only two things I bought, as well as a Jeremy Maclin jersey. So it was not the most successful trip to Lincoln Financial Field, actually. Yeah. And we lost to the Cowboys when I went. So really, that wasn't a great trip in hindsight, looking back at it. Obviously, it was awesome because I went to Philly. Everything else connected to that day was a disaster. But there we go. The Jeremy Maclin jersey is somewhere in the cover behind me. Maybe it will get a show one. It will get an appearance on one show, but poor Jeremy Maclin. What could have been? Anyway, it's not really about the past.
I have to ask, when an Englishman goes to Philly, do they visit all of the American Independence memorials in Philadelphia?
When a history teacher does, then he definitely does. my holiday trips are basically history trips with a little bit of sightseeing involved. But yes, I didn't start chanting Rule Britannia. I didn't wave the British flags. People did realize I was British very quickly. I actually met Brent Selig's dad, which is a weird story. So Brent Selig's dad was in the truck selling food outside, and I went to order something from him. And the second I got there, he just looked at me and went, "What the hell are you doing here?" And that was my sign that I sounded a lot more British than I realized. I never realized just how British I sounded, actually, until I've started speaking on a podcast and everyone tweets how British I am, because I'm so used to American accents. Whenever I play any NFL podcast, which is frequently, my wife will come in and do her best American accent. And for me, the American accent is just normal because I've spent years listening to Americans on podcasts. So I think in my brain, I sound the same as the American podcasts. And it's not until I've started actually talking that I've realized from the many, many tweets of people saying, wait, you're British. That yes, I am. And yes, I do sound a lot more British than I realized. But there you go.
My mother-in-law swears that I edit this podcast and speed your voice up because she thinks you sound a lot faster speaking than I do. I listen, when I go back and listen to this podcast, I listen to it sped up at like 1.5 speed anyways. So
yeah, my motto always is I've either got a lot to say or I've got a bunch of rubbish to say. And the quicker you say it, people won't actually take in any of it. So hopefully it's the first one, but if it's not for some people, then yes, slowing down my speech is actually a big target of mine. But when I get excited about something, I find it very hard to, maybe that's something you can play. If I start talking really quickly about somebody, then you know it's either really irritating me or I'm genuinely excited. If I'm remaining calm, I'm thinking it through, because naturally I do like to get through as much as physically possible, which is probably why this podcast lasts about an hour when we sound last half an hour every week. Sorry, Shane, I've just literally seen the most bizarre news of all time.
Okay.
Like, genuinely, I know we're not doing a Broncos podcast, but Ian Rappaport has just tweeted that Jerry Jeudy has agreed a contract with the Browns for 3 years, $58 million, with $41 million guaranteed. Jerry Jeudy, what on earth is going on with the wide receiver market? That is possibly the biggest overpay I've ever seen. That's, am I missing something? Like the Jerry Jeudy that nobody wanted, that, I mean, I liked him pre-draft. He's got 3 years, $58 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's a rich contract, especially when you consider what they're already paying Deshaun Watson. I mean, Jerry Jeudy's still never had a 1,000-yard season.
He got $19 million a year. And it's not even all like one of those rubbish contracts where it's only the first year. He got 41 guaranteed at signing. That is mental. So when people talk about the Saquon Barkley deal, just remember that you can always just pay $19 million for Jerry Jeudy. What a... Talk about banking on upside. Sorry, nothing's still the Eagles. It's just come up. I've got Rapshi's notifications up on my phone, of course. And that's just pinged up. And I've like, just, it's taken me aback.
Well, and you look at what some of the other guys did, like Gabe Davis and Darnell Mooney, the contracts they got. I said on Twitter earlier in free agency, that's the strongest possible argument that you should just be drafting a receiver in the second or the third round every single year. The receiver market's insane. That's a crazy contract.
Just draft them. There's like probably like five or six guys at least that are better or more exciting than Jeff. It makes me feel better about the Saquon Barkley deal as well. Because who's going to be better for your offense next year? Saquon Barkley or Gabe Davis or Jerry Jeudy? It's not comparable. It's weird. What a weird contract market. Especially when there's so many good receivers in the draft. It doesn't make sense. Like the market has gone nuts at the same time that there's hundreds of good, or not hundreds, it's a slight exaggeration on my behalf, but there's multiple good receivers every year. That one shocked me. Not many contracts really shocked me. That one has shocked me. Right. It's 8 minutes, Shane. We haven't even spoken about Devin White. Shall we get into it?
Maybe we should. So we will dive in. We're going to spend some time on Devin White, and then we'll rapid fire the rest of the Eagles free agent signings and or trade acquisitions. At least that's the plan. So we'll see where we get to. So let's start with Devin White, who received a 1 year. It was reported as up to $7.5 million contract. We since know that is a 1 year, $4 million contract. With $3.5 million guaranteed, and then incentives can bring that up to $7.5 million. So basically a $4 million base, $3.5 million guaranteed, so he'll be on the roster. We've got some stats. We've got some film. We can get into Devin White. Now, I know there's a contingent of Eagles Twitter that was really excited about the Devin White signing. And I know this because I was live on a podcast the week before, or the day before, excuse me, the Devin White signing. And there was a lot of people in chat that were throwing Devin White out as a name, and they were really excited. And so certainly I expect those people to be pretty excited by the Devin White signing. I'm cooler on Devin White. I think you were as well. And we were briefly mentioned off air and then said we'd just hash it out on podcast how our views changed watching him a little more in depth. So do you want to start with stats here? Do you want to start with film? Do you want to start with your initial impressions?
Let's do your stats. Do your stats. And then I'll go a little bit more in depth in film after. For like, do you want to give us like the generic Devin White breakdown of last year? And then I'll go a little bit more specific on what I've watched.
Okay, so I tweeted this out. You can go find it on Twitter at Shane Half NFL. Obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, it's up here on the screen. Like I do for all the Eagles players at the end of the year, I tweet out their stats from Sports Info Solutions, their PFF grades, where those rank, etc. So this was among all qualifying linebackers, of which there were 69. And to qualify, you had to play 500 total snaps, with at least 100 of those snaps being in coverage. So we're trying to exclude the Hassan Reddicks that primarily just rush the passer. So he played 857 snaps in 2023. He had 437 coverage snaps. In those coverage snaps, he had two interceptions, two passes defensed. Again, this is per Sports Info Solutions. He allowed a completion percentage on 55.6%. of passes which he was targeted, which actually ranked seventh among all linebackers. But his deserved catch percentage was 85%, which was 41st among linebackers. His passer rating allowed was 42.6, which ranked second. Yards per coverage snap, 0.3, which ranked 10th. His EPA per target was negative 0.560, which was third. Now, it's worth mentioning that coverage stats are really tricky, particularly for linebackers, because charting services don't know the call. Sometimes it's really hard to figure out who exactly is responsible for what. So you can take those with a grain of salt, but at least they're a snapshot. He rushed the passer 116 times, which was eighth, and he had 2.5 sacks, a 2.2% sack rate, which ranked 45th, 22 pressures, an 18.8% pressure rate, which was 37th. And then when it comes to tackles, he had 81 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, an average tackle depth of 2.4 yards, and his broken tackle plus missed tackle rate was 10%, which ranked 35th. And then, of course, he had his PFF grades. PFF really doesn't like Devin White. He ranked second to last in defense grade, second to last in run defense grade, 21st in tackle grade, 42nd in pass rush grade, and 44th in coverage grade. So PFF definitely does not like Devin White. I posted out on Twitter right after the signing his PFF grades, and like they're all red. So he's pretty much never had an average PFF grade. His stuff from Sports Info Solutions painted a little better picture this year. So that's kind of the stats on Devin White. I also just say up front, like, I wasn't excited by this deal. Now, I do feel a lot better about the deal knowing it's $4 million with incentives rather than $7.5 million. Because at $7.5 million, you know, I really start to question, why not get Jerome Baker? Why not go pay $1 million more for Jordan Brooks? And some of those guys, why not keep TJ Edwards from last year, which certainly you can't just go get him back, but TJ Edwards signed for $6.5 million a year. So seeing the numbers come out that it's a lower contract, that makes me feel a little bit better. But overall, I think Devin, I went into the film thinking Devin White is really bad in coverage, but he's a good pass rusher. He's a good tackler. He's elite athlete in terms of speed and things. And I don't think coming out of the field, out of the film, I've changed those views a lot other than to say I still think he's not very good in coverage, but I think his speed allows him to like get to the right place at times, if that makes sense. And I actually think I overestimated how good he was as a pass rusher, because I think most of that also comes from his speed. So he's kind of the epitome of a speed wins player. I don't think he like stacks and sheds blocks well. I don't think he's really got good pass rush moves. He just blows by people. And in coverage, I think he generally doesn't do like the best job staying connected to guys. but I feel like he can make up a lot of ground in a hurry if he reads, you know, out the play correctly. So there's a lot of raw athleticism with Devin White. There's a lot of upside with him. And we'll see if the Eagles are able to get him there. I think at the end of the day, the Devin White signing is a lot of, it's basically low risk. It's high reward potentially. And, you know, the upside is he's an elite athlete. He's been utilized well as a blitzer in the past. We all know the Eagles defense lacked youth and speed last year. Devin White brings youth and speed. And so if you can get disciplined play out of him, he could be a difference maker. I wouldn't say that has happened in 5 years of his NFL career, but there has been flashes. And so low base salary, high incentives. I don't want this to make the Eagles think they have properly addressed the linebacker position, but he's going to be, it's going to be an upgrade over what the Eagles were rolling out last year. At least over Nicholas Morrow. Like, I would still like Zach Cunningham to be a part of that picture, because I do think Cunningham's pretty good as a run defender. But that's kind of where I was at after circling around. I know you've got some film examples we'll show here and talk through some more things, but what did I miss as I was watching White? What did you see that I missed?
I think we're pretty similar. So I went in expecting a guy that was just like a bit gung-ho, just like all over the place, running around, sort of getting beat by play action, offenses like taking advantage of him. And I didn't really see that. He was a lot more disciplined than I thought, actually, at times. The obvious one is the pass rushing. Like, we don't really need to talk about that too much. I agree with you. I don't think he's a great pass rusher, but he is because he's so fast, if that makes sense. So if guys get hands on him, he struggles to get off blocks. He's not an edge defender by any means, but he's just so fast that if you're going to send a blitz and you're going to send an overload, for example, you're going to send 6-on-5, as every team did against Eagles last year, Devin White is brilliant because he'll get to the quarterback in a second quicker than most normal linebackers will. I feel like, big picture, what I'm really interested by this signing is that he is coming from a scheme that is totally different to the Fangio scheme. Like, you just can't see. I try to find examples of zone coverage where he's like picking up slot receivers or running down the field with tight ends or doing more like zone match stuff. And it's just not really there. Like, there are some examples of zone coverage that I thought, oh, I can see what the Eagles like, but it's such a projection. It's like a huge projection. They are going to be hoping massively that Fangio can rein him in. And just big picture, I'm a little worried about how light this defense is in general against the run. It feels like Howie and the Eagles organization really value undersized speedsters at linebacker right now. And I'm guessing that's because of the trend of going to a more modern NFL and more passing. And we know the Eagles want to stop explosive plays. But I think on a down-to-down basis, they're going to be light against the run. So the thing that I noticed about Devin White is, and this is going to sound really basic, but this is as simple as I can make it. Let's talk about run game first. If he's kept clean, he's really good. So if you can keep him clean, he's strong. Now, when I say kept clean, what do I mean by that? If you look at play 3 on my film review, Shane. So it sounds really basic to say kept clean because sometimes he does a good job keeping himself clean. So this is an example where he's basically not blocked. He looks very quick. He gets downhill very quickly. So this is easy to be kept clean. Like, I watched this play and thought, right, I'm not exactly wowed by it. No one's going for him anyway. So, but there's also examples, which is better, which is play 8 on my film, Fred. No, it's not. It is play. This is good podcasting. There is a good example where he is kept clean on my film, Fred. And maybe that was the one I was on about. Anyway, there is another one where he is kept clean. I'm sure I tweeted it, where basically he manages to avoid the offensive lineman because of his speed. It is play 8. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going mad. It is play 8. So this is an example where I think a guard or a tackle are actually trying to get to him at the second level. It's a tackle, but he's too quick and he avoids the tackle. Now, that is when he's really good. So you've got two examples there. You've got one example where he simply isn't blocked and one example where he's too quick for the lineman. That is when he's good. And I think, and I've said this before about the Bryce Huff signing, the Eagles are putting so much faith in Jordan Davis next year. Like, the more I see the way this team is built, Shane, they are really trusting him, Carter, Milton Williams, to take on some double teams because they're all light. Like, everyone's lightweight. Huff's lightweight. Nolan Smith's lightweight. Nakobe Dean's not exactly big. I wouldn't say he's lightweight, but he's not exactly big. He's a fast guy. Devin White, run game-wise, if he's kept clean, is fine. He's a good tackler, and he's very fast at coming downhill. The problem is, if we just do run game first, he is so lightweight when it comes to getting off contact. So if you look at Phil and Fred 10, for example, this is the classic like stack and shed where you get a pulling guard. And if you go back to like football 10 years ago, you get loads of pulling guards and you get big, strong linebackers taking on the guard at the point of attack. He has no interest in taking him on, like none. This game, Shane, the 49ers game, and I didn't just watch one game before people tweeted me saying it was one game. I had one person say, well, we don't care about the 49ers because they're so good. That's not relevant. And I'm like, well, if you want to win things, they're the kind of games you should be watching. If you want to learn about a player, you want to learn about them from the toughest games. He was appallingly bad against the 49ers. Now, it was his worst game. Like, I watched about five or six and I based it off PFF grades and they gave him the worst one. He had some games where he was good. He was good against the Jags. He was good against the Vikings. But he's really passive downhill. And that's not the only example I saw. Clip 12 is the one that will scare a lot of people because this is a tight end blocking him. A tight end. Look how much he is moved by a tight end here, Shane. That's not on offensive lineman. He is being carried. If you're not watching, you're listening to a podcast, I'm not exaggerating when I say 6 yards laterally, six steps. He's just moved. Like, there is no strength at the point of attack. He is lightweight as hell. So that's why I'm talking about how you need to keep him clean in the run game. And again, I go back to, you're going to put faith in Jordan Davis, that Jordan Davis is going to clog up two offensive linemen and keep Devin White clean. And the final negative I'll show run game wise, Shane, is what I thought I'd see more of. I didn't see as much of this, but look at play 11. He has plays where I just don't know what he's looking at. Like, I watch his play a lot. He's just got completely confused. Like, if you pause this play, when the guard pulls, like, I watch this quite a lot. It seems pretty obvious that 54, is it David, is basically taking on the pulling guard. And Devin White is basically actually kept free. Like, he is actually in this situation. He's like the lone man. And it looks obvious that they're playing already outside. 54 is taking the outside shoulder. 98 is taking outside. Like, there's the gap. It's right in front of you and he runs past it. And again, we're not in the room. It could be that 98 is playing this wrong and Devin White is meant to be exchanging and he's meant to set the edge. So I'm not going to comment too much, but the way it looks defensively to me, it looks worrying. So I think run game wise, where the Eagles really struggled last year, you've got a guy that can be really efficient if you keep him clean and he can be really explosive in terms of coming downhill. But the run game scares me more than the coverage. The coverage I'm not as worried by. It's the run game that bothers me. And I think there's a general theme about the Eagles at the moment is that they're weak against the run. And he builds up a picture of an undersized defense that is very fast, very explosive. But I think you're going to get some teams try and bully the Eagles next year. Teams are going to look at, if you lay out a starting front seven and you've got Devin White, N'Kobe Dean, Bryce Huff and Nolan Smith out there at four of your seven, or even three of your seven, if you take out Nolan Smith and say, put a Josh Sweat out there, I think teams are going to look at that and say, yeah, we can run on that. And then you go back to a Fangio style where you're going to have two deep safeties and they might be plus one in the box. If I'm an offensive coordinator going into playing into Eagles next year, I'm thinking we can bully this team up front. And again, I go back to that word or that name, Jordan Davis. I think huge faith currently, the way this team is constructed now. They don't have a big linebacker. They're all undersized. I really liked what we saw from Ben Van Simmeren last year as well with his one start. He's also about 220, 230 pounds. I know that linebackers are changing position and people are trying to put safeties at linebacker these days and that people are becoming undersized, but I think the Eagles are a little bit light. Before we do coverage, because I've got some clips for that, is there anything you wanted to add there just to his run defense before I get into the coverage stuff?
No, I mean, I think you covered that pretty well. Like, he's a good tackler and he's strong and powerful. He's like you mentioned on your film thread about him not giving up a lot of yards after contact if he's kept clean. And to be honest, like that's kind of what the scouting report on N'Kobe Dean was, not for the size, but just that he was a good run defender, but if he was kept clean and he was playing behind Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, funnily enough, in college. And so the whole thing was keep N'Kobe Dean clean in college and he can fly downfield and make plays in the run game. And it feels a little bit like doubling down on that. And he does, he's got great range with his speed, but like you mentioned, not identifying the gaps in his responsibilities sometimes. And, you know, people pointed out his, I think he was a second team all pro in 2020, the year they won the Super Bowl, or whatever year that was. Was that 20? I can't remember now, but it's like, well, he had 9 sacks that year. And also, you know, he was on a Super Bowl team, so he got a lot of attention, and he was playing next to Levante David, who did a lot in terms of like pointing things out to him pre-snap and getting him lined up. And he's kind of a point and shoot player, I feel like. And the Eagles don't have that presence. Now, maybe you're hoping that can be N'Kobe Dean, but N'Kobe Dean doesn't really have a lot of reps either. And so I share your concerns, especially against the run, that, you know, the Eagles just added Josh Huff, who we talked about last week, that's not necessarily a good run defender. And you've got
Bryce Huff. We should do a drink every time you say Josh Huff, Shane.
That on Twitter, too. I did that on Twitter, and somebody called me out for saying I was going to do it on the podcast, but I'm just going to start saying last names. The Eagles added Huff last. We talked about Huff last week and light against the run. And this has been the Eagles' Achilles heel. And you would like for it not to be your Achilles heel when you've drafted defensive tackles back to back years and, you know, the top 14. But it goes back to that little dichotomy we said last week. You cannot be light at edge, have poor linebacker play and play light boxes and expect to stop the run. So I think the Eagles are hoping that Devin White is a key cog in helping remedy the linebacker problem. I remain unconvinced as far as that goes in the run game, though. I do think it's going to start a lot more up front if they're able to keep him clean, like you said.
I think you summed up the point there, Shane, in some ways, where you said they drafted 2 defensive linemen in the top 14. I think that is the plan. Just very quickly, then we'll move on because we don't spend too long on him. And I think we've sort of said our thoughts. I'm similar to you. I think he's better than Moreau Cunningham. He's better than Shaq Leonard, definitely. I would have liked maybe a someone a little bit better or a little bit more consistent, let's say, because I'm fed up at Eagles linebackers being awful. But the difference between this one, I will admit, is when you watch him, he's obviously got talent. Like, this is not a guy that hasn't got any talent. Like, Nicholas Moreau, I liked to an extent, and Zach Cunningham, I even liked to an extent, but they were very limited. Like, they just got beat because they couldn't physically do it like the top guys. Whereas if Devin White works, don't get me wrong, he's going to have some really good games. He's going to make some explosive plays. Like, a little bit in coverage that surprised me. So, as you said, I don't want to make football sound very basic, but sometimes all sports are very basic. He's really fast. And when you're really fast, you can make plays that players who aren't as fast. So, if you go to clip 2, Shane. Now, I tweeted this saying, like, please be aware, I actually do not watch the highlights. I did not look at highlights on my thread. If you watch all my threads, you'll see there are 4 games only. It's because I only watched 5 games. So I did not go in going, I want to watch a game when you got sacked. This interception is just, like, nuts. Like, I mean, you can count on one hand how many middle linebackers can make plays like that in the league. So he's lined up as a blitzing in the A-gap, and he's not even, like, off the ball. Like, he's really in the A-gap. He sprints back and manages to pick off a comeback about, 15 yards down the field. And Trevor Lawrence doesn't really throw this late. He throws it before the guy comes out his break. Like, this is just one of those players you're like, yeah, Nicholas Moreau, Zach Cunningham, they're never making this play. Like, never, ever, ever. And that's the upside you get in coverage. And I would like, I'm praying, Shane, that he was not a Howie Roseman signing, which I think he probably was. But I hope they really looked at him with Fangio. Because I am guessing that Fangio is looking at it going, do you know what? If we just teach him how to play zone coverage, we're going to get someone who's really, really useful in coverage because there's not a lot of players that can make plays like that. There were some other plays I really liked. So there was, and notice I haven't showed any examples of him blitzing here, Shane, because if you want to watch that, just literally watch any highlight package of Devin White. Go on my thread, I've got some, or just go on YouTube and type in Devin White sacks. He can fly after the quarterback. I'm not really worried about talking about that because it's quite basic. If you look at play 6, this is probably my favorite play of his, which sort of sums up the sad person I am because it's a nothing play. But the Vikings use motion to try and create like a stretch to the left. And all of this play is basically to get Devin White in the middle of the field moving to the left so you can hit the backside dig. You can see Kirk Cousins looks to his left. He knows exactly what he's doing. And Devin White starts to move, but he's so quick and he's got the ability to redirect. And I'm not blaming him for moving either. Every defender moves with the quarterback's eyes and motion. But you can see that is pure film room from Kirk Cousins. If you watch a little pump fake from Kirk Cousins, he's not even trying to throw that to the left. Because in fact, he's actually got the numbers to the left. He could throw this to the left. This is purely about moving Devin White. The behind the camera angle now, this one's the best one. If you just watch Kirk Cousins on this, all of this play is deliberately designed to get Devin White to move. He is not trying to throw this ball. Look at this pump fake. This is not Like, he's not reading this out. This is by design. He is going exactly to that backside dig. And that's really good by Devin White. Like, that's really good. He doesn't commit, and he's got the speed to get back into the throwing lane. He creates that sack in many ways. The upside is there. Like, the potential is there. And he's that kind of guy. I've written this in my film review. It's not been posted yet. But he's the kind of guy that coaches will watch the film and go, I can work with him. Give me that guy, and I'll fix him. And the problem is, after 5 years in the league, you're probably not going to fix him. But coaches are arrogant. Of course they are. They wouldn't be where they were in their career unless they're arrogant. Though I think any head coach or offensive defensive coach is not incredibly optimistic about their own beliefs. Of course they are. That's part of being high-level coaching. He's the kind of guy that when you turn it on, you'll see plays like that and you go, I can work with that because he's got talent. The problem is, Shane, is that talent doesn't always matter if you make mistakes like this. Now, if you go to clip 13, you can disagree with me here, and I'm not going to kill him too much for this one because it's possible, you could argue, that we don't know how he's been coached. But if you look at this, he's in basically the same zone. There's a guy running an intermediate out right behind him, and he completely vacates his zone and goes chasing the quarterback. Now, you're not playing Lamar Jackson. You're playing Kirk Cousins. There's a guy chasing him out the pocket. There's also a guy closer to you. That's just easy. And to me, that's about awareness. And I think that's what Devin White lacks. After 5 years, do I think he's going to get that? Probably not. But if Vic Fangio wants him, and Fangio signed off on it, and he thinks he can convert him, and he thinks he can teach him the way that he wants his defense to be played, I think the ability in coverage is there. He was better in coverage than I thought. I expected worse. I expected more of this on tape. I actually didn't see as much of it. I didn't tweet this clip out because I didn't want to go past 14 for a Devin White thread. But there was a clip I watched of him covering George Kittle down the seam, and he ran with him effortlessly. Like, he just ran alongside him. There's a couple of clips of him covering running backs in the flat. We know Fangio's scheme asks a lot of one-on-one with running backs because essentially, if you play a team that plays trips to one side, bit of scheme nerdiness here, but if you play a team that plays trips to one side, three receivers on one side, loads of teams do that. What the Eagles will often call under Fangio will probably be a tricks call, which essentially means you'll play four over three on that trip side. And what that does is it locks up your cornerback who's on the single receiver in man coverage, and your linebacker, if he's on the same side as the running back, will be locked up with the man in man coverage with the running back one-on-one. That means Devin White will probably have to play more man coverage than he did last year. In the games I watched, he didn't do it a lot. But in the games I watched of him, he looked pretty competent doing it. He looked pretty good handling running backs and tight ends out in the flat because of his speed. Do you want him matched up with the best route runners in the league? No, but that's the same as basically 99% of the linebackers. That's always a bad matchup. But when you've got speed, you can cover up faults. I'm slightly more optimistic than I was before when I saw the news, because I am a little bit sick of just a lack of talent at linebacker. It's not just about bad play. I'm a little bit fed up of just guys that don't deserve to be starting, that really just do not have the requisite athleticism to be starting linebackers. I think at the very least, you haven't got to worry about that with Devin White. If he can make 3 or 5 splash plays a game, makes 1 or 2 bonehead plays a game, but plays the rest of the time pretty well, then the Eagles have had a pretty big upgrade. So I'm not completely out. It's not the signing I would have made. It's not the type of linebacker I would have signed. But I'm not going to kill the move too much for the reasons that I've outlined. That's about as in-depth on Devin White as I think I can go, Shane. I think there's enough there for the real film sickos to get stuck into. But overall, yeah, I don't hate the signing. I don't love it. It's like a 6.5 out of 10 for me personally.
Yeah, you talked about his ability to play man coverage. And that's one thing where if you have elite speed and sometimes there's struggles with awareness, like, you want that guy in man coverage, not trying to read multiple things out in zone. It's just, this is your guy, like, take him. And don't worry about complex rules. And if this guy goes vertical, you cover this guy. And I think there's some really good applications, some really good usage for Devin White in that area. You're our backside linebacker. You have the running back if he comes out of the backfield. Like, I think those are things he can handle better than, you know, trying to be a hole defender and cover two and things like that. I think that's going to be a little bit more of a struggle for him. And so one of the nice things about a lot of the matching coverages that Vic Fangio runs is it's going to end up with Devin White manned up on somebody. And I think that is a good usage for his skill set. Another thing, we mentioned that he's not necessarily a good pass rusher, but he's productive rushing the passer because he's just so fast. And if you get hands on him, you can kind of slow him down. Well, Vic Fangio runs a lot of these creeper type pressures where he's going to he's going to have the one tech. This is going to be too scheme nerdy, but he'll have the one technique, like cross the face of the center and rush into that gap. And he'll also bring a linebacker from that side and then drop out the backside edge rusher. So in effect, you're still rushing four, but like all four of them come from one side of the center. And it's really hard for people to pick up, and it messes with their slide protection rules and things. And like, that's something that's a good fit for Devin White, because you're trying to just let him explode upfield and, you know, go chase the quarterback. You can utilize him in some spy situations. We talked about, if you flash all the way back to the Fangio podcast, that they try to play, even like their cover three zones, they try to play more like fire zone with a bonus dropper. So instead of, you know, three deep, four underneath, it's three deep, three underneath with a bonus guy you can sort of do whatever with. And we talked about, you know, the advantage to doing that is that bonus guy, you can just let him do whatever you want. You know, if you're playing the Ravens, you can run that coverage and you can have, you know, Devin White spy on Lamar Jackson. If you're playing, I don't know, if you're playing the 49ers, you've got, yeah, you're playing the Saints, you've got Alvin Kamara out of the backfield. You can play that same coverage and just tell your bonus dropper and Devin White, like, you've got Kamara out of the backfield. And so I think there's some creative things that you can do with him. Like I said, it's not a very big contract. I feel better about the numbers than what was initially reported. And we'll see. It's an upgrade. It's the Eagles and getting some speed on the field at linebacker, and that's certainly not a bad thing. And we'll see. Hopefully Fangio is able to use him in some creative ways.
Just quickly, Shane, and this is the very, very, very last thing, because we've got about 10 minutes left. We said we wanted to do, and we can do very quick fire. But as I said, we said this before, this podcast is meant to be more in depth. So we're not going to go in depth on every single free agent signing, because quite simply, we haven't got the time to watch them all yet either. If you actually want me to us to watch these players, it does take time. But I had two really good tweets from Bucks fans, which is always nice when you get guys on Twitter that you've never followed, that you've never even heard of. I genuinely didn't read any Devin White film reviews. Everything I've said is purely based on the games I watched. But somebody replied, called at Real Bucks Talk, who is, I believe is a film analysis, a YouTube channel. They've got 5,000 followers. They tweeted me saying, basically, they agree. They said, great, Fred. They said, he's very inconsistent. He can be effective when he has openings to work with, which is what I spoke about, but it's only in flashes. And then there was another YouTube video that somebody has link to me that said that basically it's called What Happened to Devin White, saying about how good he was in the Super Bowl. And they basically said when Vita Vea is in there and he's kept clean, he is able to flow to the ball a lot better. And it goes back to my point, said it so many times today, huge trust in Jordan Davis next year. He is going to have to be the Eagles Vita Vea, and he's really going to have to help keep Devin White clean, because if Devin White isn't kept clean, then this signing will be a problem.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's do a very quick free agency news roundup. And do you want to start with Kenny Pickett, seeing as he's the one that got the people mad?
Let's do it. So we'll rapid fire some of these others. So the Eagles, this wasn't a free agent move, but it was a trade. So we'll talk about it. They traded for Kenny Pickett. So they gave up 98 overall, which is their compensatory third round pick that they got from Javon Hargrave leaving. So 98 overall. and 2 7th-round picks next year, which they had 4, so that's fine, for Kenny Pickett and a 2024 4th-round pick, which is pick 120. So according to trade value charts, moving from pick 98 to 120, it is the equivalent of trading the 120th pick. So essentially, they got Kenny Pickett for the pick difference of a mid fourth round pick and the 2 7ths next year, which are pretty much throwaways. So that's the compensation. My initial take on the Pickett deal, I liked it. The Eagles have shown that they're going to invest in backup quarterback. And I would rather you go get Kenny Pickett, who you're going to pay like $3 million this year, than go pay Marcus Mariota $6 or $7 or $8 million. I really don't want to be drafting another quarterback because they've already got Tanner McKee as their developmental guy. So I didn't mind the move at all. I thought there were a lot of Eagles fans that were really upset by the Kenny Pickett thing. I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't have a first round grade on Kenny Pickett. I had a second round grade on him, but, and he's been bad at times, but also he's been in a really bad situation. I mean, their offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, is one of the biggest jokes. Like, everybody for years knew that Matt Canada needed to go. And so, you know, he was in a bad situation with a bad offensive line. Is he going to come in and Nick Foles the Eagles to a Super Bowl if Jalen Hurts gets hurt? Highly unlikely. Can he come in and win, you know, one game out of two if Jalen Hurts sprains his ankle? Probably, especially, you know, with the weapons that the Eagles have at their disposal. So I like the Kenny Pickett move. It solidifies that backup quarterback position for you for the next 2 years, at which point I'm sure they'll decline his fifth year option, and you hope Tanner McKee is ready to step into that position by then. But what was your initial thoughts on the Kenny Pickett deal?
Yeah, I was a bit confused because I didn't see the pick come back, and I thought it was a third round pick, and I was like, what? But yeah, perfectly fine. I really like it. You get 2 years of him, which is important. Justin Fields only gives you one, because of obviously where they were drafted. Justin Fields is also so uber talented that it will create media distractions, because he'll come in and create some stupidly good plays and Philly media will go mad. And to be honest, I just can't be bothered to do that again. I did have a first round grade on Pickett, so there you go. I was wrong. I had him as a late first, although I'd like to see him with a better offense. I basically said that his issues will be when basically there's pressure, he's a bit of a disaster. He becomes too aggressive. He doesn't want to take checkdowns. And this has always been the problem going back to college. But I think for the Eagles, that's actually not the biggest problem, because the Eagles offensive line is normally very, very strong. I really liked his ball placement coming out. I think he's someone that threw with good anticipation. He's got decent arm strength. He can create outside of structure. I don't think he fits the offense in terms of the QB run stuff as Hurts, which I understand why people are worried about. But then also Marcus Mariota did, and he was still not a very good backup, because I don't think he could throw the ball, basically. I think this offense wants to throw the ball first, and the running game is almost secondary. And you've also just added an elite running back who you think, if you've got your quarterback out for a few weeks, he should be able to carry the load, give him 20-25 snaps in those games, and don't worry about the QB run game as much. So I like it. To be honest, Shane, I want to back a quarterback who's basically decent and doesn't cost a lot of money. When I see Marcus Mariota continually getting like, then you get like 10 million again or 6 million or something stupid, I just don't get it. Like the wide receiver free market we spoke about at the start, I'm all on board for getting a quarterback for basically nothing for 2 years. Like, if you develop him, if he plays a little bit, if you can get something for him in 2 years, great. If he stays here for 2 years as a backup, he won't create a QB controversy. Jalen Hurts will be the guy. Pickett can learn from him. And I think he is decent. I think he is fine. Personally, I know why people went on about Justin Field. It scared me a little bit, just because I think Justin Field is so extremely talented that he could create some stupid Philly media stuff. Whereas Pickett's not that. Pickett's not a flash player. So yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't have too much to say except for backup quarterback, two cheap years. I can't really ask for a lot more. Do I wish they'd given up the pick? Probably not. I wish it could have been maybe around later, but that's life. That's what happens.
I can assure you that Kenny Pickett's going to make some throw in a preseason game, and Philly media is going to be like, oh, should Kenny Pickett be the week one starter? It's going to happen. You can book it. I don't think you can avoid that, but I was totally fine with the deal. By the way, not a Steelers podcast, but I love what the Steelers have done this offseason at quarterback. Just getting Russell Wilson, who I don't think is a good player, but essentially for free, getting Justin Fields, who I do think is a talented player that hasn't put it together, also for free, essentially. And you know, having the being able to say, hey, we missed on this first round guy. Let's move on and try something different. But anyways, not a Steelers podcast. Let's keep rolling here. The next one we've got is wide receiver Devontae Parker. He is on a 1-year, $4.7 million deal. The Eagles only pay $1.2 million of that, though. The Patriots are on the hook for the rest. Devontae Parker is a former first-round pick, and I mean, he just never lived up to that billing. He's only had one 1,000-yard season. It was in 2019. However, he is 6'3". He does have 4.45 speed, and so, you know, again, there's some upside there. To a much greater degree than we talked about with Devin White. There's some upside there, but if you've been in the league this long and not hit it, you know, I saw Warren Sharp had a tweet that went out talking about how he was last in next gen stats player tracking data for separation each of the last 4 years, which, you know, you can take when you're consistently that low, there's a problem, but it's kind of like coverage grades. Also take it with a bit of grain of salt because, you know, you get guys who maybe aren't great separators in the slot facing off coverage that automatically get separation and things like that. But Devontae Parker, in my opinion, he is not your wide receiver three. He is depth piece here that may or may not make the roster. And I fully expect now that the Eagles, I mean, we're still sitting here in mid-March and the Eagles haven't signed any other wide receivers. So they have four receivers on the roster: Brown, Devontae Smith, Devontae Parker, and Britton Covey, and that's it. I fully expect the Eagles to draft a or multiple wide receivers and make other wide receiver moves between now and the preseason.
Yep, you nailed it. He is not wide receiver free, absolutely no way. I actually quite like it if he's an outside wide receiver only. Basically, Jalen Hurts throws a great deep ball. His offense likes to take one-on-one shots on the outside. I think he's a 4.4 speed guy at 6'3", so basically stick him on the outside every so often. Give him a few go balls. He's capable of making some wild catches. Just don't make him your wide receiver free. Don't ask him to play in the slot. Basically, stick him out wide. That's when he can be really good. Stick him out wide, throw him a couple of go balls. You might get a couple of special plays once every few weeks or so. But don't expect anything more. Should not affect the Eagles' draft plans in the slightest. I think very controversial take here, but looking at what Jerry Jeudy just got played, I don't know if the Eagles are going to be able to afford Devontae Smith in a few years, and I'm sure they will try, but I think that wide receiver, a slot wide receiver, should be a big need for the draft. I think getting a wide receiver free in here who they can develop into a potential two is a definite possibility. So I would not, Devontae Parker does nothing in that sense to fill that hole. For me, he's an outside wide receiver only who maybe gives a few snaps when AJ Brown needs a breather. Maybe you can come in and play him in 12 personnel. I've never watched him in depth, but I'm sure he can block at his size. I like to think he can. So 12 personnel, bring him in when you get single high safety, take the occasional shot down the field on first and 10. And if not, just let him block, let him run a few very simple routes. The classic like free receiver route, come back, go and out, something along those lines.
I would rather see six deep balls to Devontae Parker than six deep balls to Quez Watkins this season. So it's an upgrade there. Okay, let's keep going. Linebacker Zach Bond was signed from the Saints. 1 year deal. We still don't know the contract, which again probably means it's very low. He was a third round pick in 2020. He has appeared in 62 games with 14 starts in that time. He's coming off his most productive season as a sub-package player and a core special teamer. He had 383 special team snaps this season. He's basically an edge slash linebacker hybrid. He would probably be like your Sam, kind of the Hassan Reddick sort of role. Obviously, not a guy you want starting, playing a lot of snaps. I think that he's probably your Hassan Reddick backup heading into this year, assuming Hassan Reddick's still on the roster. He's not a guy that I would want to be a starter, though.
This is one that I'm interested by, and I haven't watched him, so hold fire. I might talk about him in future podcasts. I'm going to try and watch him this weekend. But the reason why I'm interested in him is purely because, and this is literally the only reason why I'm interested in him, Shane, I read one scouting report with him, and it was by Bleacher Report in the year 2020, and Matt Miller's pro comparison for him was Hassan Reddick. So the second I saw that, that made me think, right, I should watch him because I think Hassan Reddick may go. And he's a bit like a Nolan Smith type in terms of, is he an edge? Is he the off-ball linebacker? I think it adds weight to what the Eagles view about the linebacker position, Shane. So he is one that I'm going to watch. So hold fire on him. Check my Twitter thread over the end of the week. I might even get to him on Twitter on Thursday-ish if I get time to watch him. So yeah, keep an eye out for, get excited, Zach Bourne film incoming soon.
All right. We'll go to the next one here that I am excited about. It was the signing of interior offensive lineman Matt Hennessy. Again, one-year deal, unknown contract. But Hennessy's only 26 years old. Now, he's coming off of a season in 2023. He missed the whole season with a knee injury. But the reason I really like the Matt Hennessy signing is because he has over 1,000 career snaps at center. He's also got experience at left guard. Cam Jurgens only has 43 snaps at center in the NFL. And I know that Jason Kelce handpicked him. He's had 2 years, all of that stuff. It would be grossly negligent to walk into a season with the only center on your roster having delivered 43 snaps in the NFL. Like, that's a great way for there to be a catastrophe. And I'm not even talking like, what's your backup plan if Cam Jurgens gets hurt? Obviously, now that's Matt Hennessy. But what if you get into camp and Cam Jurgens just can't snap the football accurately? Like, the Eagles are in shotgun all the time. This is a problem if he can't do that. And I'm not saying that's going to be an issue. I'm saying a smart team prepares for that contingency. And so I think that's Matt Hennessy. If, you know, you get into camp, I don't think they're going to, like, make this a competition at center. But if you get into camp and Cam Jurgens is really struggling there and Matt Hennessy can step in and do it, well, Cam Jurgens has played right guard for a year, and you can roll with that. And Hennessy's young at 26. So I really liked this signing. I don't think it speaks to them being concerned about Jurgens. I just think it's a responsible move for the team to make. I'm glad they brought in a vet center.
Yep, I'm fully on board with that. I'm a little bit gutted they lost Jack Driscoll, actually. So this might be like a not a replacement in the same position, but someone else. I agree. Could be a guard, could be a backup center, and it gives you a little bit of backup if Jurgens has a bit of a nightmare or gets injured. He was also a third-round pick, and he became a starting center the year after before he got injured, which, if you just look at that very basic timeline, third-round pick suggests he's got some level of talent. And the fact he started in his second year and basically only lost a job when he became injured suggests that there is talent there, as always. I don't mind taking a risk on injury-prone players when it's like a backup, because you're not expecting him to play every snap anyway. So I've not watched him. I'm not really sure I intend to. I'll depend on how much time I get in between this and draft season. But he fits the bill of like a good, solid backup that seems like a classic Eagles move that I think down the line we might say that was a sensible signing.
All right. They also brought back defensive back Chauncey Gardner-Johnson on a three-year, $33 million deal. Contract full details aren't out, but reportedly only $10 million of that was guaranteed, which essentially makes it a 1 year deal with team options. So at $10 million guaranteed, the Eagles could get out of it after a season if they wanted to. Now, obviously, we weren't podcasting together the season that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was here, but I've talked about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson a lot on this podcast feed. I know you've written about him a lot. What are your overall thoughts on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and his return to Philly?
Yeah, I sort of love it. I'm guessing, Shane, that no contract news is probably good news, because agents normally want to get out when they get big deals. So my guess is that his deal was not as good as he hoped. I think the Eagles sorely missed him last year. I think he's a very versatile defender. I think he could be your starting slot cornerback if you really wanted to use him there. But I think in a Fangio defense, you want this sort of hybrid safety corner anyway. I won't go into the huge detail about the film, because I feel like everyone's knows the film. So and if you don't, just go and look at basically anything I've written. I actually did write a whole review about it that I tweeted out about a week ago. But the big reason why I like him, Shane, is what I wrote in my conclusion. I said very simply, he's the player you can count on to make a big play. He is the type of defender that can change the momentum of a game. And he is the Eagles' defensive tone setter. And I think he plays with an attitude and he plays with an edge that, quite simply, the Eagles defense looked weak and passive last year. And I think they missed a bit of a nasty guy, a bit of an annoying guy, to be honest, in some ways, a bit of an idiot. And I think his comments about the Eagles fans sort of summed him up. He's wears his heart on his sleeves. And I think sometimes that's what you need. on defense. I think the Eagles last year just sort of accepted they were bad. And I think someone like Chauncey, he maybe wouldn't have accepted that. He'd have gone down swinging. And I think in the world of the NFL, sometimes it's not a bad idea to have a player like that on your roster.
Yeah, when they made the move, I jokingly said on Twitter that I like the move. Now go sign a safety. And I think he brings a lot of versatility, like you mentioned. But at the end of the day, like, I'm having dreams now about like drafting Cooper DeJean, who also is a guy that people think might be a safety, and maybe he can play slot, and like just having both of these guys and the creative things that Fangio could do if, like, you know, we're starting with both of these guys high and we can rotate one of them down into the slot and it could go either way. And like, I just think there's a lot of versatility there, and the Eagles don't have a slot corner right now. Obviously they cut Avante Maddox. Zach McPherson was cross training to be a backup slot corner and got hurt last off season. So, you know, what are the Eagles going to do at slot? Maybe they draft somebody, maybe they draft a safety, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson plays in the slot a lot more, which is where he started his career. He's a really good run defender. He's a good fit for that. I just think it brings versatility to the backside of the Eagles defense, and it brings some physicality and some attitude. So I was really excited that he's coming back. I don't necessarily want him to just be, you know, a split field safety. Like, I want you to be able to move him around, and that requires other moves of other pieces you can use interchangeably too. So we'll see what the Eagles do from there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably about it, isn't it, Shane? I've looked at the time, realized.
Yeah. Two more linebackers, and then we'll get out of here real quick. So they also got Julian Okwara, 1 year, $1.3 million. He was a third round pick by the Lions in 2020.
I had no idea. I missed that one completely. Wow. All right. I'm going to Google him frantically. I totally missed that one. I knew you were going to talk about the other one. I didn't realize there was another guy. Right. Yeah. That's terrible fan me. Been watching too much Devin White film.
He had five sacks in 2021 and 21 pressures, but he only played 120 snaps last season. So fell out of favor in Detroit.
Wow, yeah. I did not know that. Right. No, I did know that. I'm being stupid. I think I did know that. Might be your pronunciation of how you said his name in my head. I'm talking about someone else. They signed the other linebacker as well, didn't they? That's the one I was going to watch next. After.
Warren Burks.
Yeah, that's the one I saw. Didn't he get the most money? Was he the one that got 2.5?
Yeah, 1 year deal worth. They use the phrasing worth up to $2.5 million.
Yeah. He's a special incentive guy, base, isn't he?
Yeah, he was a third-round pick in 2018, played 4 years in Green Bay and then two in San Francisco. So he brings that intel from behind enemy lines. His best season was last year in San Fran. He had 46 tackles, one sack, and one interception. Played in 15 games. He started five of those. He played 188 special team snaps as well. So in Burks and in Bond, you have two guys that bring some special team skills and maybe some situational linebacker skills as well.
Yeah, I've noticed, Shane, a lot of these signings are all high draft picks. There's like a little bit of Harry Roseman style, is to go and get like failed, or not failed, but third rounders who didn't make it as much and see if they can turn their talent into something, which I think is fair enough. I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, Howie's like, let's go sign guys that were drafted in the third round to play linebacker 5 years ago, so we don't have to draft a linebacker in the third round this year. I think that's the whole philosophy.
Bring back Davion Taylor. That's what I say. Don't. Please don't.
Never.
Worst draft. One of the worst draft picks of all time. Anyway, I think that's enough free agency talk, Shane. The people who wanted it in depth, you got Devin White in depth, and then we're going to move on to draft soon. So exciting. There could be one or two more signings or trades. So you never know. Keep an eye out on my Twitter for a few more film breakdowns. I will get to a few more players. And I think we'll move on to the draft shortly.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. So that's going to do it for this episode of On the Shane Page. You have heard us talk about every free agent the Eagles have signed up until this point. We'll start to slowly transition to draft stuff over the next few weeks, and we'll get you some Eagles targets and things like that. But that is going to do it for this episode. If you enjoy the episode, please like, rate, review, thumbs up on YouTube, all of that. We enjoy hearing from you guys. And, you know, we enjoy telling the rest of the BGN people, like, look, they like our show a lot too. So do us a solid, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Mention the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we will catch you guys next week for another episode of On the Shane Page. Go Birds.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.